Today on Maine Calling, the outlook for Graham Plattner's Senate campaign. Will Graham Plattner withdraw from the U.S. Senate race? If he does, then what? Who decides on a replacement candidate, and who will it be? Those are some of the questions today after a major accusation surfaced yesterday. The news site Politico published a story in which a Maine woman asserts that Plattner sexually assaulted her 5 years ago. I'm Jennifer Rooks. For many Democratic leaders, including those who supported Plattner's campaign, the new allegations are too serious to ignore. Immediately, most called for him to withdraw from the race. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the impact of the allegations and what would happen next if he steps away. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The future of Graham Plattner's U.S. Senate campaign is in question today after national news outlets reported allegations that he sexually assaulted a Maine woman 5 years ago. Yesterday, the response was fast and furious. Plattner denied the allegations, but many former supporters called for him to withdraw. What happens now? With me to kick off today's discussion, Kevin Miller, who is Maine Public Radio's State House correspondent. Also with us, Pat Callahan, host of the political podcast In the Arena. He's a former TV news anchor and reporter. And Ron Schmidt, professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. What is your reaction to these allegations against Graham Plattner? What do you think ought to happen next? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Before turning to you, Kevin, let's listen to audio experts from three people. The first voice you will hear, the woman who says Graham Plattner sexually assaulted her, Jenny Racicot, speaking to CNN last night. Then Senator Susan Collins speaking in June about past Plattner allegations. And finally, Senate candidate Graham Plattner responding yesterday.
I felt really uncomfortable with the responsibility of and the weight of my story and what that might do.
The allegations in the latest story are troubling, and I believe that Graham Plattner has a lot of questions to answer.
Regardless of the inaccuracy of the reporting, but mindful of the political reality it will inflict, we are taking the time to reflect on the best path forward for the state that I love, the people that I love, the movement I belong to, and the goal of defeating Susan Collins.
Kevin Miller, before yesterday, political reporters had heard that there were more. I'd heard it for a week and a half, that there are more allegations coming out against Graham Plattner. Had there been a sense that they were this serious?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. And it was clear that something serious was coming just based on the amount of buzz that all of us were hearing. But it wasn't clear exactly what it was. You know, there was all kinds of speculation, all kinds of rumors out there about what was going on. But I think what seemed clear to me, I think to a lot of others, is after that last scandal that came out right before the primary, that many Democratic leaders kind of had been signaling that their patience for Plattner was limited, and he could only really endure so much more. So when this broke, it, as you said at the beginning, it was just the reaction was immediate. This was definitely one step too far.
As we heard, Plattner has stated that he is taking the time to reflect on the best path forward. What do we know about whether he will withdraw from the race? And I want to note that we're having this conversation at 11 o'clock in the morning. And if you are listening to the rebroadcast of the show at 8, this may have changed. But what do we know right now at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, Kevin?
Yeah, so everything is pretty much up in the air. The only thing we've heard from Plattner is that clip that you played yesterday. and we haven't heard anything more from him. We know that kind of his campaign is huddled up and there's all kinds of conversations happening, you know, behind the scenes about if he did withdraw, apparently who they would want to see go forward to replace him on the ballot. But it's entirely unclear. What seems pretty clear is that he does not have the support. I mean, that's abundantly clear now. Almost every single state party leader has now urged him to withdraw or to step away. He's lost the support of almost all the national party leaders who had been backing him. And really critically, he's lost the support of these national, you know, campaign operations that he would need to challenge Republican Senator Susan Collins. So it seems all but inevitable that he really can't continue. He could continue in this race, but his chances of being able to win this race, given just the absolute cratering of support, it just seems highly, highly unlikely at this point.
At this point, what are the deadlines that come into play?
Yeah, so this is what makes things even more interesting, because this is somewhat unprecedented, at least in recent years. So the state law is pretty clear about the deadline. He has until next Monday at 5 p.m. to withdraw. And after that, the state party committee would select a nominee. But it's unclear how exactly that process will play out. And that's what a lot of the speculation is happening now, because checking in with the Secretary of State's office, they acknowledged that there's no requirement within the state law of how the state party committee would go about selecting a new nominee.
And that was going to be the question. What's the process? You said there is no formal process. Wow.
No, there's no formal process. It's going to be up to the state party to decide how to move forward. And this is going to be a pretty fraught decision, right? Because we're less than 2 years away from a presidential election where Democrats were really frustrated with the way the national party selected Kamala Harris to come in after Joe Biden. That has to be top of mind for state party leaders right now. They don't want to be seen as just appointing a new nominee that isn't going to be able to get the support of the Democratic base here in Maine. So they're going to have to be really sensitive. There's kind of talk out there about they might have to call a state convention. I've even seen some mentions of a state party caucus of some sort, but the party leaders are not saying anything, at least publicly. We've reached out to them. Other reporters have reached out to them. They're kind of being quiet right now. And I don't know whether that's because they're waiting for Plattner to make his decision and then they'll announce how to move forward.
Yeah, and we have also put in a request to have them call into Maine Calling today, and don't believe that will happen, but hope that it does. Pat Callahan, I'm going to turn to you. What was your reaction to the Politico story yesterday?
Well, I wasn't surprised by anything really except the timing. I had a hunch, as Kevin mentioned, we've all heard a lot of rumors that something was coming. I assumed that if Republican opposition research had turned up something really damning against Plattner, they'd wait till after the Monday deadline for him to withdraw and cause more trouble for the Democratic Party. But if that was their plan, they were undone by some really good reporting by Jessica Piper and Politico, because, you know, these rumors have been out there. This woman had been interviewed. Jenny Rascott had been interviewed by the New York Times and did not really level serious charges at that time. But she explained she didn't think she had to. And now she had a change of heart and has done so very courageously to make herself a public figure here. And that cannot be a pleasant experience in any way, but she felt a responsibility. So when I saw the story yesterday afternoon, I was just surprised by the timing that it came now instead of a week from now.
And we'll hear from that reporter, Jessica Piper, in just a few minutes. And we'll ask her about how she decided to report this story, how she went about doing it. But Pat, you've covered politics in Maine for 4 decades. Has a major party candidate ever withdrawn from the race at this point?
No, I can't think of anybody who has won a nomination and then withdrawn, which is one of the reasons that the replacement theory, if you will, is so fraught, because there is no modern precedent for doing it. And as Kevin mentioned, the notion of a convention or a big caucus, I suspect Democrats would like to do something like that to give their delegates, the ones who'd been elected to their ordinary biennial convention, a voice in all of this, so that whoever comes out of the process is going to have as much support as possible. We can you know, talk at some point about the names that are involved and who's most likely. You look back at other states that have had to deal with it in Minnesota when Senator Paul Wellstone died before the election. Minnesota Democrats took Walter Mondale out of retirement and had him run for that. It didn't work out. New Jersey had a similar situation when there was an ethics problem. I think it was Robert Torricelli was the candidate, and they brought Frank Lautenberg out of retirement to run, and he did succeed. But in Maine, there is nothing in my experience or my understanding of prior history of the 20th or 21st century that says, no, this is uncharted territory for us now.
Ron Schmidt, what was your reaction yesterday afternoon?
I was struck by Plattner's tone. The combination of the way that he usually confronted previous scandals and the sense that he was aware of how different this particular circumstance was. And, the first thought I had was for the people who have been really, really mobilized by his candidacy. Senator Collins, among other things, is very, very good at running for re-election. And her what political scientists call her re-election constituency is broad. It's not just a question of Democrats voting against Republicans. The last poll I saw showed that some 10% of people who voted for Kamala Harris were intending to vote for Collins before any of this story even broke. And so the Democrats really need the people that Plattner was bringing with him. But they also, even more than that, I think, need the energy that Plattner was bringing with them. You know, this idea that this candidacy is different, that it's going to have broader results, because if they can't turn people out, if likely Plattner voters just decide that this is too depressing or that they don't like the way the party handles it, then that could very easily undermine any hopes they have of defeating Senator Collins.
Both you and Kevin have touched on something I wanted to ask you, Ron, which is, we're talking about whatever it is. If Plattner resigns, Democrats have a very short window to decide who will replace him on the ticket. And there are several possible candidates. Given that Plattner was the anti-establishment candidate, there is some irony that the so-called establishment will now make the choice. What will they need to consider?
And the party will have to be very, very careful about the way that it does that. Like, I don't. Establishment is a complicated way to think about how our parties function. Our parties try to give the impression that they're almost like philosophical movements that are all coalesced around different visions, but they're interest group combinations. You know, there's a lot of different people, a lot of different factions involved. And so the Troy Jackson supporters are people who are an important part of the Democratic coalition. And so are Shannon Bellows and so are Hannah Pingree's for that matter. And it's less a question, I think, of the establishment coming in here to settle this than it is of deciding how the party wants to move forward out of all these composite parts. But the story won't necessarily play that way unless the party is really careful. And they need to not be giving the impression that there's just a small smoke-filled back room someplace that's going to resolve this and put their choice in place over the heads of the Democratic rank and file.
All right. Well, Kevin, let's talk about the potential candidates. Again, if Graham Plattner resigns, of course, we have the Democrats who ran for governor, who the decision was ranked choice voting and decided by a ranked choice vote. And many of them were very popular. Troy Jackson, Shenna Bellows, Nirav Shah. Of course, people have floated the governor's name again, even though she lost to Graham Plattner in the primary. And I'm even seeing Heather Cox Richardson, her name being floated. What are we hearing from these people?
Yeah, I mean, we're not hearing much from some of them. Troy Jackson has said that he would be interested. A few others have come out and said they'd be interested. David Costello, he was the third Democrat that was on the ballot during the Senate primary. He has already said that if Plattner withdraws, he would put forward his name as a nominee. I think the big question mark is Governor Mills, right? She withdrew on April 30th when it was clear that she didn't have a path to beat Plattner, but we haven't heard from her about whether she's has any interest whatsoever in running for this. Shenna Bellows did very well during the primary. Nirav Shah as well. Some of the other candidates, folks we're hearing about, Jordan Wood. So Jordan Wood was running for the Senate before he dropped out to run for the main second congressional district race. You're seeing his name come up. You know, it's almost like you name it. Anybody who's run recently in the past couple of years is popping up left and right, and they're going to have their individual constituencies and their individual factions. And I think Ron was right. I mean, this party it's a big kind of conglomerate party. It's not a unified voice at this point. And there are definitely some strong factions. You know, the reason that Plattner did so well, I feel like, and I'm sure Pat and Ron can talk about this as well. It wasn't just the message that he was carrying, which is this very kind of Bernie Sanders populist message. It was also that he was a phenomenal communicator. He was a really good speaker. You'd go to these rallies and people were just inspired listening to him. The challenge will be, is there anybody that can come in and can replicate that or kind of build on that momentum that Plattner had?
Pat?
You know, I think, I think for Janet Mills, I think it's highly unlikely that she gets the nod for a couple of reasons. One is I'm not convinced she wants it in the first place. I think she sort of seemed to have her arm twisted a little to get into the race at all last year. Second is her age. And, you know, we don't want to be ageist about this, but I think what's happening in Maine and across the country is a movement toward younger generations of candidates. So apart from Graham Plattner's progressive ideology, part of his appeal, and Kevin is right, he's a terrific communicator. He speaks off the cuff and really does inspire people, is his youth and the fact that he's fresh face. And if you feel government isn't working for you, you want to shake things up and you're willing to try something that maybe is a little risky. Most people would have said U.S. Senate is not an entry-level job in politics, but they were willing to take that chance because they think the status quo just isn't working. In terms of who would be most ideologically similar to Plattner, you have to look at Troy Jackson and Shenna Bellows first, both with strong progressive constituencies and ideals. You know, Troy Jackson, he's an interesting candidate. He's not polished, and he is not as dynamic a speaker as Graham Plattner is. However, you know, his second district roots and working class background are very appealing to a lot of people. So there's, you know, he, I think, emerges as a strong contender here. Shenna Bellows is also well known. And while she did lose a race to Susan Collins a few decades ago, things have changed since then. And she's better known. And the message that she brings of, you know, that's another thing to consider. The message that any Democrat needs to bring, I think Plattner was making a mistake when he started challenging Susan Collins as being corrupt. People in Maine know Susan Collins and they like her, even if they disagree with a lot of her votes. So I think that's not the way to win. The way to win is to say, we don't like Susan Collins' votes anymore. She's put too many judges and cabinet members in place that Democrats feel are not healthy for the country. So whoever the nominee is, that's the attack I think they've got to take. And stop worrying, unless there's some major scandal about to explode, it's not likely to happen. We all know who Susan Collins is. So that's just not going to work.
We're going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about Graham Plattner's Senate campaign as he is losing support of major Democratic leaders and organizations. The allegations of sexual assault that came to light yesterday have prompted a range of reactions. Here to talk about this political storm, Pat Callahan, who is a former anchor and reporter for News Center Maine. He now hosts the podcast In the Arena. And Ron Schmidt, political science professor at the University of Southern Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line now is Jessica Piper. She is a senior data reporter for Politico. She co-authored yesterday's story about the sexual assault allegations against Graham Plattner. Jessica also has Maine connections. She is a Bowdoin grad and a former reporter for the Bangor Daily News. Thanks so much for taking the time to call in, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica, how did you first learn about Jenny Racicot's story, and how did you meet her?
That's a great question. There had been sort of rumors about there being more to the story after a New York Times piece at the beginning of June that mentioned her, and she was quoted in as well as a few other ex-girlfriends of Graham Platner. So I had connected with Jenny through a woman named Cheyenne Hunt, who is sort of an advocate for victims of sexual assault. I kind of had been making calls, and we connected, and she introduced me to Jenny.
Okay, and this was about 2 weeks ago?
A bit over 2 weeks ago now, I think.
Journalists hear a lot of things that they never report because they can't confirm them, and sexual assault stories are particularly difficult. How did you and your co-author and your editors determine that Racicot was being truthful and that this story was legitimate?
Absolutely. That's so important for every story, and certainly for something as important as this, to understand and to verify her story. We worked to contact people who she had talked about this with, you know, prior to Graham Platner running for Senate, and in many cases years prior. We wanted to make sure that her story had stayed consistent, you know, from what she was telling people before he was a candidate for office and what she was telling us now. We also had her go through emails, text messages, Instagram messages, Facebook messages, which were the most important, to look at how she had told people about Graham Platner in the past and how she had, you know, characterized her interactions with him. And that helped us support the story and the account that she was willing to give us on the record.
As I'm sure you know, there has been a lot of speculation about the timing of this story and the motivation behind it. What would you say to those who are suspicious, those who are skeptical?
Well, for people wondering about, you know, her motivation, I would refer them to what she told us and how she is quoted in our story. She talks about that, you know, Graham Platner is someone who she actually agrees with politically, and that she was torn to come forward in part because of that. You know, she said she had a huge moral conflict between supporting his politics but not supporting him as a person. And ultimately, she decided that she wanted the truth out there. And so, you know, I think that speaks to her motivation and why she came forward.
One thing I've noticed, Jessica, is that when national news outlets such as yours and the New York Times that you mentioned report on Graham Platner's campaign, they tend to add this caveat that even if people nationally might think one thing, people in Maine have minds of their own and maybe react in a different way. And given your experience in Maine, that you went to Bowdoin, that you reported from the State House, do you think that things play out differently in Maine than they do nationally, that the priorities may be not completely in line?
Look, it's certainly the case that, you know, national reporters can be in a bit of a bubble sometimes. You know, talking to people who spend a lot of time in Washington is different. And, you know, they engage with politics differently than many voters in Maine do. I would say I was on the ground in Maine in June talking to voters shortly before the primary. And the truth is there's no one way that voters in Maine behave and respond to things. What I've heard, you know, talking to voters is a big mix in reactions to, you know, many of the events that have happened in the state this year. And so there's definitely no singular main reaction to anything, including the latest news from yesterday.
Mia, I'm going to ask our guests today. We are joined by Pat Callahan and Ron Schmidt. Before we let you go, Jessica, Pat, Ron, do you have any questions for Jessica? Pat?
I do find it interesting that a story like this has been bubbling under for so long. What was your sense, Jessica, of you talked about the moral dilemma that Jenny Racicot went through. And yet, when we saw her interviewed by Jake Tapper last night, she seemed composed, you know, and what was your take on her state of mind?
Well, I don't want to speak to her state of mind when she was talking with CNN specifically. Obviously, I wasn't in that conversation. That was CNN. But I think, you know, she had to make a decision over time about how she wanted her story to be portrayed. You know, she told us when she was talking to the New York Times, she didn't feel ready to go on the record. She didn't want to be known as a rape victim. And then she changed her mind, you know, when we talked to her and after she had thought some things through. So I think she certainly, you know, in talking to the media over the last few months, you know, dating back to when the Times had reached out to her, her views on how she wanted to present and tell her story evolved. And I think the latest coverage reflects where she's at now.
All right. Well, Ron, do you have a question for Jessica?
Just a thank you, really. This is a very difficult story to parse. And I think you've done us a service by the way you brought the story forward without without inflaming the situation more than it already is.
Jessica Piper, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica Piper, one of the political reporters behind yesterday's story about Graham Plattner and the allegations of sexual assault. Joining us now is Nicole Clegg, who is president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. Nicole, you want to make it clear that Planned Parenthood of Northern New England is separate from Planned Parenthood Main Action Fund. Given that, why did Planned Parenthood withdraw its endorsement of Graham Plattner yesterday afternoon?
Hi, and thank you for having me. So just to help folks understand, there's the local affiliate, so that's Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, where we provide health care to thousands of folks in Maine, and then we have a political arm. We also work in a federation, so there's a national office that is the endorser for federal races. So it was the national office yesterday that issued their rescinding of the endorsement and made the call to ask Graham Plattner to drop out. Now, we certainly supported that decision and agree that that was the right one. I think, you know, from our perspective as a healthcare provider, you know, we provide something called trauma-informed care, which means that when people disclose sexual trauma, we take that seriously and we trust and believe what they're saying. And you know, the information that came out yesterday is incredibly compelling, and we trust it and feel that that disqualifies him as a candidate.
Okay. And you know, this is all happening in a broader context. We have so many emails coming in where people say, look, innocent till proven guilty. This is not fair to Graham Plattner. We have also, of course, the backdrop of the Me Too movement. How do you feel as though the societal norms and the conversation about sexual assault and what we expect from our politicians is changing?
You know, that's a great question. And I think that there's an important difference between the character of a candidate running for statewide office versus somebody that is, you know, being tried for a crime. And, you know, what's important for us is to vote and elect someone who has the character that we want to have upholding Maine values. What we know when it comes to sexual assault and sexual trauma is it can be very hard for someone to come forward and disclose that, and then to disclose that in a public setting where it's going to receive incredible national attention is it takes an incredible amount of courage. So, you know, we take women at their word when they come forward and disclose this. We know that they're telling the truth. We know that they are risking their privacy, they're risking their reputation, their, you know, ability to be employed. Like, there's a lot of risk that comes forward or comes with coming forward and sharing this information. So, you know, I'm sad that this is what it came to, but I also believe fundamentally that we as Maine voters deserve a candidate that's going to have the character that we want and is ultimately going to defeat Susan Collins for this U.S. Senate race.
Nicole Clegg, thanks so much for calling in. Nicole Clegg with Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And before we go to more calls and emails, I just want to ask both of you, I'll start with you, Ron. you know, about the broader context. Of course, we're having this conversation when we have a president who has been accused of sexual assault by many women. And this has not been part of the conversation in politics until the very recent past.
That is correct. And it is, it's disturbing, I guess I would say, to see the constancy with which this issue, which you think of anything would be a red flag, this would, keeps coming up in regard to how candidates are chosen. And I appreciate how quickly the National Democratic Party has moved on this case, because obviously there's a potential path to a Senate majority lead here for the Democrats, and it's a very important advantage for them. But sexual assault and credible accusations of sexual assault, and for that matter, credible accusations of child abuse, are treated as though they're not necessarily a red line for candidates, and our politics deserve, and our people deserve much better than that.
Pat, I keep thinking about. I keep thinking about Gary Hart and that just seems so different and innocent.
Well, and look at Al Franken resigning from the Senate over something far less serious than this. And I do think, you know, people want character to matter in their elections. And you look at the history of the people Maine sends to Washington, and certainly in the 20th and 21st centuries, we've had people who are of good character doing their best to help the state and the country, whether you agree with them politically or not. They're decent people. In Graham Platner's case, I think Democrats in particular were willing to sort of accept some flaws given the circumstances. He was a guy who had returned from several tours of duty in the military and had gone through PTSD, and he admitted his behavior was wrong and he no longer feels that way. But the steady drip, drip, drip of allegations that popped up, first the tattoo, which was real. His explanation for it didn't hold water for a lot of people, that he didn't know what it was until just recently. They were willing to overlook those things. But once you reach the point of a woman flat out saying that she was raped by this guy, that's a whole different thing. And it's no wonder this is the straw that broke the camel's back. And so I have a feeling there are a lot of Democrats in Maine who may be feeling relieved that they're going to have a different choice. They say, well, we don't want Susan Collins in there anymore, but is this the guy you really wanted? And many I've talked to said, well, I'll vote for him, but I'm not happy about it. So now, because if he gets out of the race, there's time to put a different nominee in, that they may have a chance to say, okay, our goal is still the same. This isn't the person that energized me for this campaign, but it might be the person who will still fight for the values that I care about and do it coming from a position of being a person of generally good character.
We'll go to Jill, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Jill, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but if you're on speakerphone, it'd be better if you picked up your hand.
Sorry. Give me a second. Okay. I just wanted to just put my two cents in as a normal, everyday person. I've spent like 10 years with domestic violence, and I've also been raped. And honestly, I listen to this, and I'm voting for Graham Platner no matter what. This is a witch hunt. Too many people are saying that they're raped without proof. It seems very short-sighted that it's coming up right now. And again, I'm still struggling with my own internal issues, but I feel like we've got the burnt, you know, we've got Harvey What's-His-Face, and there's not one person in the U.S. that's been charged with anything, you know? So to me, this just seems like a tidbit of morality that nobody seems to have.
Yeah, and you know, Ron, Jill's comment is, I'm looking at all the calls and emails coming in, and there seemed to be a big spectrum of opinions about how important this is.
How should I put this? I think that Jill's frustration is widely shared. The idea that this is this sort of ever-present problem that is not being adequately investigated, much less prosecuted. And then it comes up in this particular case at this particular moment. And it that does reflect the way that our elections process tends to work. It's not just coincidental. But I think it's also the case that the party, if the party has to make it clear that this is actually a high priority issue. It's not enough to just sort of point at the White House or the current DOJ. The party has to take responsibility for even credible accusations against leading candidates. And the huge gulf you reference between like Gary Hart. I mean, Gary Hart basically was sort of swaggering towards the press corps about what he could get away with and what he couldn't get away with. It basically was naughty. And this is an accusation of a awful crime that is we're seeing more and more of, facing seeming impunity. And part of the way to end that cycle of impunity is to change Senate rules. And so all of this sort of comes together at this particular moment for very real reasons.
Pat?
I think I would go along with that, people, they want to believe in a candidate. And I think, let's be honest, Donald Trump has kind of lowered the bar for what is considered acceptable behavior if he's politically in line with what you think. And so, getting back to with Graham Plattner, it's one thing when it was revealed he was exchanging sexual text messages with women while he was married. That's really a matter between himself and his wife. But it does say something about who he is, and that matters to voters. This, of course, goes beyond that, far beyond that, because it's alleging a crime. As far as I know, he could Graham Plattner could be prosecuted for this if a DA wanted to take up the case.
Jill, thanks for your call. We are going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about Graham Plattner's rocky campaign, the allegations of sexual assault, and the possible paths for the Democratic Party in the race for Senator Collins' Senate seat. My guest, Ron Schmidt, political science professor at USM, and Pat Callahan, former anchor and reporter and currently host of the podcast In the Arena. Share your comments and questions. What matters to you in a candidate? What are your reactions to the news yesterday? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to read just a few of the comments coming in. Kyle on Facebook says, "This public outcry is absolutely disgusting. Whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty?" Sarah says, "If it is right for Mr. Plattner to step aside, it must be only done if every other man in U.S. Congress or executive branch or Supreme Court who has ever coerced a man, woman, or child into unsought sexual acts also steps down immediately. Otherwise, this pressure on Plattner smacks loudly of a carefully managed witch hunt." Here we've got a Scott who says, "Whether the allegations are true or not, it would have been a non-issue if he had an R after his name. Sadly, the Democratic establishment didn't want him to begin with. I just hope whomever they appoint against the voters' choice can actually beat Collins in the fall." So that's just the tip of the iceberg of some of the comments coming in. Ron, I want to ask you the question of time, though, because, you know, as we all know, Kamala Harris believes that she did not have time to win the presidency. She didn't have time for the voters to get to know her properly. If Graham Plattner steps down and if another candidate is selected, will that candidate have time?
Plattner, I believe, had done a really amazing job of connecting with Maine voters. And despite the fact that he came in as a cipher of introducing himself to a broad section of people in the state. And one of the things that's really striking about Maine politics, if you come from someplace else, as I did, is the level of engagement with average voters with the process. People expect to vote. They expect to be heard and to play some sort of a role in the process. And that, I think, is what's at stake here. You know, the comment about managing the outcome, for example. The Democratic Party has to be very careful to not give the impression that they're just bosses coming in to put in a favorite, because they have to move quickly. They've got, assuming that Graham Plattner drops out by 5 o'clock on Monday, the Democrats have 2 weeks to replace his name on the ballot. And yet they need to provide a process that is going to suggest transparency and openness, and to genuinely get a sense of the wishes of the Democratic electorate. Ideally, you know, there would be months to carry this thing out, but that's just not the case. And so whoever it is that comes in is going to have to make the best of a rotten situation. One of the things that, you know, that to be professorial, one of the things Machiavelli said about a new prince is that everyone's watching you all the time. And in a lot of ways, that's negative. It means they don't take you for granted. It means they find things to take objection to. But it does mean that if you can perform well under those circumstances, it's a huge opportunity. And this could potentially provide that for whoever it is that winds up filling Graham Plattner's shoes.
And Ron, I would add that, you know, Democrats, if they have any silver lining here, is that they have a number of potential candidates who have been vetted over the last year as Indeed. They ran for governor or other office. So and there are also several of them are longtime public figures. For anyone who pays attention to politics, you kind of know who they are already. So they'll have that going for them. What goes against them, of course, is that it was already an uphill fight for Graham Plattner to beat Susan Collins. I mean, if polling only showed him a couple of points up on her in what's supposed to be a big Democratic year, that's problematic. Whoever steps in will probably not be as charismatic as Plattner has been. And he gets a lot of credit, deservedly so, for being willing to meet voters where they are. The number of town hall meetings that he's done, and he connects with people that way. It's not easy to do. So, That's the challenge for if they do have to replace him on the ballot. But they do have some options that are, you know, people who are known to Maine voters, particularly those who follow politics closely.
We'll go to Holly calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Holly, go ahead.
Hi, I was just listening to the broadcast, and I'm curious when they said about the seriousness of the crimes and how it would affect his candidacy that has I haven't heard anybody bring up the fact that Susan Collins endorsed Brett Kavanaugh, who was also on national TV for the same crimes.
Holly, thank you. And Pat, an important point that one of the reasons people believe Susan Collins is probably the biggest reason people believe Susan Collins may be more vulnerable than in elections past is because of her Kavanaugh vote.
That's right. And of course, she what she did, as people will recall that Brett Kavanaugh was accused of sexual assault in his younger days, and that had bubbled up, and they appeared to be credible accusations. The Senate hearings covered all of that. What Senator Collins did was use the standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. She treated it as though it were a court case almost, in my view. That was the way I saw this, is when she spoke on the Senate floor about why she was going to vote to confirm him to the Supreme Court, is that the charges had not been proven. That was part of it. But also that he had assured her that Roe versus Wade was settled law. We now know he didn't really believe that, apparently, because he voted to overturn that. But rather what bothered a lot of voters at the time is that this wasn't a trial. It was a job interview. Essentially, you're applying for the job of being on the Supreme Court in that case, or the U.S. Senate in this case. And so you have to ask yourself, even if these accusations are not rock solid proven with evidence and DNA, do you trust this person to have the good character to take on this job? To me, that's where you might have a parallel between Plattner and Brett Kavanaugh. What does it say about their character that they're in this position at all?
Go ahead, Ron.
I'm sorry. If I could respond to that. And Holly, thank you very much for bringing that up. And we hadn't done so yet. I think Pat's exactly right here. There's a big difference between the bar of judgment when we're deciding whether or not to send someone to prison and whether or not we are comfortable claiming someone as a representative in writing our laws or for that matter, in hearing over the charges against people, a charge of breaking our laws in the Supreme Court.
Holly, thank you. We will move on to Scott, is calling from Lisbon Falls. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. A couple of things. You know, I've been a candidate for House seat in the state, but also I was down at the convention, and I've spoken with all of the candidates. I am deeply disappointed in what happened with Graham, because I was so much in favor of him. I just liked his talk, and, you know, he's active in Maine People's Alliance. I just really hope for better. But the problem we have of teaching boys to be men, it needs some serious work. We do a bad job of that. I continually advocate for more women in politics because it's far less of that kind of behavior. But if we have to go and if we have to change, I would throw my vote instantly to Troy Jackson because he's second district, Senate president. But the irony of this whole discussion is that not only Brett Kavanaugh, but we have a sitting president who was convicted of rape. How do we do that?
Scott, thank you so much. Many important points there, Ron. But one thing I'm thinking is that, and maybe Scott hasn't said this exactly, but are there Democrats that are saying, hey, I have been so critical of Donald Trump for all these years, so it would be hypocritical of me to support someone who's being accused of some of the same things?
I mean, quite possibly, but I think that it comes down to a larger question than personal hypocrisy, right? It's a question of the legitimacy of the system. The democracy works as long as a majority of citizens think it does, and as long as they're willing to participate in it. I think that's been one of the biggest challenges of this administration, is how quick the president is to undermine the perceived legitimacy of the voting system and a number of other aspects of our public life. And so the question of Plattner here is not just, did they do it so we get to do it too? Or is this a question of my having personal consistency, but a question of raising the bar for our sense of what is acceptable or unacceptable behavior, even in the form of a credible accusation in public life?
And that raises the question of, do the ends justify the means? You know, you have a goal of replacing one political figure with someone more in line with you. At what cost do you do that? How much can you overlook? I found it interesting that the only major public figure I've seen so far come out and say that Plattner should not step away from this race is Stephen King, who said, look, if you look at everybody in Congress and the Supreme Court, and everybody's got some skeletons in their closet. He didn't use that expression because he wouldn't be so cliched. But, you know, his point is that he without sin cast the first stone. But again, we don't expect our elected representatives to be perfect because nobody is. But we do expect them to be people of good character. And that's what it keeps coming back to. And that has always mattered in this country. And sometimes we get it and sometimes we don't.
All right. A note here from our producer, Jonathan Smith, pointing out that Donald Trump was not convicted of rape. He was found liable in a civil case for sexual abuse and defamation. Just a little tiny bit of time left. I'm going to go to this email from Todd. Whether it's Plattner, Mills, or whomever, we are voting for checks and balances in Congress and voting against Trump having free reign to destroy our country and trample the world. So, Pat, I'll turn back to you. I mean, is this race in November about Susan Collins and Graham Plattner, or Susan Collins and whoever replaces him on the ticket, or is this race about Donald Trump?
Well, it's about both of those things. And Donald Trump, in the sense that if Americans who think he has gone unchecked by Congress and the courts want somebody in place to help pump the brakes, then yes, it is about Donald Trump. And that means it's about Susan Collins as well. And voters will have to ask themselves, is she acting in our best interest with the votes that she takes, or is she not? And if she strictly goes on party line and puts people on the cabinet, for example, that many feel were unqualified, then that's the decision they're going to have to make. And for whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be, that's the argument they're going to have to take to voters.
Thank you both so much for being with us today. That was Pat Callahan. He hosts In the Arena, a political podcast Ron Schmidt, our other guest, professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine. Look forward to having you both back on Maine Calling in the future. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about arts and how they're linked to health and healing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.